listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web design treats. Today, we're talking about what are the design foundations that you as a web developer need to know in order to make something look good. I think there's like probably a handful of rules. You can probably listen to this podcast, and if you apply those, your design skills will get much better. Today, we are sponsored by two awesome companies. First one is Sanity, which is a structured content CMS. And the second one is FreshBooks, which is a cloud accounting software. So with me, as always, is Mr. Scott Tolinsky. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, doing good. We have grandma and grandpa in town visiting, so it's a lot of fun. The kids are having a blast, and everything's just a little bit easier for us now that it's not just us two hanging out with the kids. So having a good week. How about you?
That's good. Good. I'm doing pretty good as well. I just sent off an email to my email list about my upcoming JavaScript course, just detailing a little bit here and there. And I hadn't sent an email in probably 6 or 7 months. I don't tend to send email a lot, which goes against the grain of what a lot of people say to do. But what I do is I just put a huge unsubscribe button at the top of the email and be like, hey, if you don't want to be here, hit the unsubscribe button. And I was just like marveling at how the unsubscribe rates are not at all higher when you do that versus when you hide it in a gray link in the footer.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's pretty good. Like I really, first of all, I think that probably speaks to people that are subscribed, but also like, I don't know why all people don't do that, right? If people don't want to be on their email list, they're going to find that link anyways.
Oh, totally. I think it's probably just insecurity. I don't do it because I'm not good at email in general. If you've subscribed to the Level Up newsletter, you'll know that it's not exactly the most it's not the most common of newsletters for me to send. I need to be better about it. Maybe I just need to get somebody who could make that their thing, their specialty, and they could just handle it for me. But for the most part, I'm really bad at it. So I think it's probably a good day for me as well if I'm sending an email, which I don't often do. So glad to hear that you sent an email. That's pretty sweet.
Sent one email. It's a big day. It's funny because like I look at my wife's inbox and like she gets like Banana Republic will email her like 43 times in one day. And she's like totally fine with that. And I'm like stressed out about sending one every couple months.
And let's talk about Ruggable, man. I gave Ruggable my email for a 10% off coupon. And my gosh, they really take advantage of that. They have, and I don't know why I haven't unsubscribed, because typically I have a very low patience threshold for this, but they send me like 2 or 3 a day too. And I'm like, I'm ready to toss Ruggable out the window. But, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, it works. That's the problem with these things is that
it like, is because I'm going to buy a rug.
Yeah, I've seen these things before. Is that the rug where you can like throw it in the thing and wash it?
Yeah, you can throw it in the washer. Yeah, which is very good for babies and dogs, you know?
Yeah, I've seen them and I was like, there's no way that will stay down. Like that will just flop over. But I'm very curious if it's actually good or not.
We'll see. Yeah, I'm going to get one for my office. I need something in here to warmthen it up. Warm it up.
Yeah, I've got one. Nice little IKEA knockoff Persian rug behind me. And I get lots of comments from people asking if it's a real Persian rug. And unfortunately,
has the answer to that ever been yes, it's a real Persian rug? Like,
yes.
Like everybody's got a knockoff one from somewhere. So that's hilarious.
All right, let's talk about design foundations for developers. So the first tip we have here is always use Helvetica.
You just don't really want to think about it. You just use it.
Just use it. By default, no problem. Best designers always use Helvetica. What else you got?
Just look at Stripe's website and you just copy it. Just copy it directly. Yeah.
They're inventing design, so why not go with it? Kind of a bit of a side tip, but if you have a Twitter account and a company releases a new logo, make sure you hate it.
And make fun of it, yeah.
Make fun of it, critique it, find lots of different logos that it might accidentally look like from the past. Makes you a much better designer critiquing logos.
Totally. That said, can we take a second to critique the latest Slack logo? It's not very good. I've never been a huge fan. Next one is always use the latest trendy illustration style. And sometimes these designers, they even release their animations or their illustrations on, you know, the design news website. And you could just go take them and use them.
Yeah. You just got to have these like oddly shaped purple people.
Purple people.
Were in front of a, that's what you need.
They got like sort of weird jello hair.
Exactly. If you're not using jello hair and lots of purple on your homepage, I don't even know what kind of designer you are. And really the final tip we have here before we wrap this up is always draw the golden ratio over top of everything. Makes it look like you know what you're doing. And it's just kind of the way to do design is put that golden ratio over top of everything and you're good to go.
It means it looks good is really what it means.
Obviously, those were a joke. Hopefully you haven't turned us off yet. But developers and designers, even though we work together, we often, poke fun at each other and there's all these sort of things. So what we're hoping for this episode is not to tell you those like do this, but like, what is it that you can think about? What are the foundations coming from a not a design background, both Scott and I? These are things I think Scott and I make beautiful websites. We think that our websites look pretty good and are fairly usable. And these are things we've learned over the years. So that's kind of what we're going. This is by no means a design of everyday things. We just read the book and we're going to tell you about spacing and whatnot. But that's our hope today.
Yeah. And if you are thinking this is going to be the thing you need to kick off your design career, I would say it's probably not, but it is going to help you make better looking websites, which is certainly the end result here. So do you want to start off with some of our backgrounds in designs in general, or maybe your background with learning design and how you feel about your design now, and maybe just a little bit of that stuff?
Yeah, I started off as a designer, and I actually almost went to school for design. I had applied to OCAD, which is the Ontario College of Art and Design. And I almost went there to be a graphic designer, but then I decided to go more down the tech route. So I had started designing in Photoshop, maybe 18 years ago, building CD art, and I designed t-shirts and things like that. And then like that translating over to good web design was a bit of a jump, because like you go from just like this like unlimited canvas of a CD art to you actually have to make something usable, and you can't just put grunge on every as hard as I try, you can't just put grunge on everything.
You say unlimited, but there's some major constraints about being this little tiny square versus this infinitely expanding canvas, you know.
That's true. And interaction design is kind of another thing, right? Like a CD art is just a piece of paper at the end of the day. And that was a big jump for a lot of people. There's a lot of print designers that made the jump over to digital. I remember implementing a lot of these designs from print designers, and they had like 400 fonts on them and things like that. And it was a bit of a jump. So that was kind of my background, is I just learned with that. And then over the years, I feel like because I always did the design as well as the dev for all of my freelance clients, I feel like I got pretty good over the years at making something that looks good and is pretty usable.
Yeah. So what was it that took you from feeling unconfident with your design skills for your clients to feeling confident and strong with your design skills? Like, what was it? Like, what was the threshold that you had crossed that made you feel more confident designing things?
I think to me it was, I've talked about this before, but it was taking other designers' designs, because for most of my clients, I would implement the design myself, but I would get these designs from other designers and implement them myself. And that made me realize so quickly that things like spacing and colors and line heights and like all these little things where the designer would come back and be like, sort of nitpick, but like the like good part of the design is not just getting it rough. The good part of it is having finesse over these things. So I think that was it. And then going back to my own designs and trying some of these things like colors and spacing and line height and fonts and whatnot, I'm like, oh, that makes it look 100 times better. And that was really just these handful of little things that I had had to go back and implement.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, mine's pretty similar in a way, although I didn't necessarily do a lot of CD design or even print design at all, but I did start. And my intention when I started my career in web was to start it as a designer. That was like really my thing, is I wanted to be a designer. And I found out pretty quickly that I just wasn't very good as a designer, and I could build websites. I could build like a technical website better than I could design a website. You know what I mean? Like it was easier for me to build something than it was for me to design it. And it took me a long time to realize that, because I just I saw the building of the website as being like, oh, just the thing you did after you designed it. So I'll just design it and then I'll build it. And then I was just like, oh, okay, well, it actually turns out I'm kind of better and like building these things more than designing them. That said, because I've always had this drive or passion to want to be a web designer, once I decided to make my formal career change into being a developer rather than a designer or attempting that, I did keep on design skills as a hobby, so to say. So I would think, well, I'm going to design this as a hobby rather than look for a career in that. And then side projects, if I was doing a side project, I would always make sure to design it myself. Or if I was working with freelancers, I would always make sure to design things myself, or even the Level Up Tutorials website. We did work with designer Mike McMillan for the logo and for like the very initial version of it. But, you know, the past like 3 or 4 iterations of Level Up Tutorials, I've pretty much just designed myself. And I think you can probably track my progression as a designer just by looking at the design iterations of Level Up Tutorials. It's still surprising to me when people tell me they like the way it looks or that the design on it is really excellent, because again, I've always approached design as a hobby. So I've been largely sort of struggling through becoming a confident designer with my skills. But I think a lot of the stuff that we're going to hit on in this episode is things that both I've learned as well as you've learned over the course of our time becoming competent designers in this industry. Yeah.
Yeah. If there's one more thing I can say about that is doing the, because every time I release a course, I design and develop a brand new website for that. Mm-hmm. I think that's really helped me, because first it's just doing a lot of content and I have to come up with a new look and feel every single time. But also as like the marketer and developer in me knows that like I need to communicate these things to the person because I want them to buy it. And I need to make sure that this specific course is a good fit. And figuring out like, how do you communicate things as effectively as possible? That's a huge part of design. And then also I just want it to look kind of cool. So sometimes I go a little bit bananas on patterns and rotating and shadows, but it's kind of fun.
Hey, if you want to see me go overboard, just go to fresh.leveluptutorials.com. It's my forms library. This is the kind of design I do when I'm not trying to communicate things, just like outrageous colors and simple, but, you know, aggressive. So, I mean, it's fun. Design is a lot of fun if you allow it to be like that kind of thing, right? If you allow it to be a fun exploration rather than maybe like a stressful thing you got to do. So let's get into some foundations, some things that you should probably think about before we get started with any of these things. These are tips that really hold over to just about every single area. So for instance, I think one of the biggest ones is, I think that people, they fail to utilize consistency and sort of the system of consistency, right? When you have several different buttons or font sizes or anything, you want them to be consistent. There's so many times that you fire up a bad design and you'll see the spacing in one direction be, you know, let's say like 2 rems or something, and the spacing in another direction be like 14 pixels, just sort of oddly, something that's like not a division or not half of, it's not something sort of related. It's just sort of, they're trying to do it by eye, but at the end of the day, their eye isn't necessarily good enough yet. And so consistency within a system is always going to make your designs better. Making sure that you have the same sort of colors and the same sort of consistent everything is going to just go a hugely long ways. And I think if I was going to tune up some people's designs, that would be one of the very first things you would do is simplify and make it more consistent.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest one ever. I've nothing else to add there, is consistency is key. Another kind of thing I want to say here is one of the fundamentals is often less is more, subtle is better. And that's true in almost everything except padding, I would say. Yeah. Because when you go, like, I'm just looking at a website that I am always irritated by the design of, and that is LastPass. I'm not sure if you've used LastPass before, but
I have used LastPass. Yeah, there's something funky about their overall design aesthetic. It just doesn't look good.
Yeah, it annoys me. No, and the whole app itself, and I'm just sitting here thinking like what is it that I don't like about it? Like,
yeah, what is it?
There's something weird about it, and I'm just looking at it right now, and it's all the drop shadows are a little bit too heavy. The padding is a little bit too close together.
Yeah.
There's no consistency. Like I'm just looking at the footer, the spacing between their like little footnotes, and then there's a huge spacing between that, and there's not enough padding on all their logos, and some of their available on the App Store, they're all pixelated, and it's just little finessey things like that I just couldn't put my finger on it. But I was like using it the other day and I was like, what is it about this? Obviously, it's a good product to me, but something about the design annoys me and it gets in the way of me using it.
It totally annoys me. Yeah, I hear you. And like, yeah, some of the icons are just a little bit too big. Even like I'm looking at like the grid view where it says like favorites or shared. It has your different passwords into different groupings. Like there's not enough breathing room there. And so, yeah, it's hard to explain. Sometimes with the design stuff, it's a lot easier for us to look at something and just know that something's off rather than to be able to explain that something's off. I had a client one time who told me that the design was too cloudy and they wanted the sun to come out, which is like kind of like a typical thing for a client to say, but like this design's a little cloudy. And, you know, obviously clients don't know what they're talking about, but what they're trying to express is just something looks off here, right? Something's just not quite right. And that's largely going to come from, again, these sort of systems that we'll be talking a little bit more about. And I think that's really the next point is to always work within a system, because especially on the web, and I think I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, but you know, you have to know the rules before you can break them. And largely, if you are the type of person who's learning this stuff, you probably don't know the rules very well. So because you don't know the rules very well, you want to work within a system. Whether or not you've created the system yourself, having a system itself will be going a long way for you. And I'm talking about a typography system, just a spacing system, a color system, build systems for everything. And then when you have a design challenge, you largely don't have to think about it as, hey, here's this new design challenge. But you have to think about it as like, which system do I use here and how do I apply it? Now, obviously, you don't want to do that 100% of the time to 100% of everything. You have to use your brain a little bit, but having a system overall is going to make your designs really come together and be more consistent. And like you said, just fix some of those weird padding issues or weird issues like that.
Yeah, I saw a tweet the other day. I'm trying to find it. I can't pull it up, but somebody was talking about how companies like Facebook and Airbnb, they have these very rigid design systems. And even we had Travis Nielsen on, and he was talking about like he's the designer at Google, and then they have this like incredibly strict material design. And you're like, well, like how do you be a designer when you're right. basically just like playing with these Lego blocks and clicking them together? And the tweet was like, no, like it may seem restrictive, but the reason we have this design system is so that you don't have to think about those things. They've already been decided on how much padding to put on something and what font to use. Has been decided on. And then it's up to you to decide, how do I use these parts to actually, it's sort of next level, right? All of that base stuff has been taken care of. And now I'm at a next level of how do I figure out, like he was talking about using the design system for earthquakes, right? Like he's a designer figuring out how do we get information to people who are in an earthquake faster. And like that to me, I was like, oh man, I always thought like, that must suck if Google tells you what blue you have to use. Like that must not be very nice. But I think I finally understand that.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting problems. They're different problems than we have to solve as developers. Last one I have here is to use the like training. I'm going to call them like a training wheel type of tool until you are more confident in your abilities. And I'm talking about things that will generate a type system for you, like all of the sizes, maybe not necessarily the fonts as much. You can pick your own fonts, but find things that develop a typography system for you. Find things that develop a color palette for you. And these things are largely going to help you make better looking designs until you understand those tools and those designs enough for you to be able to take those training wheels off and to start to write that stuff yourself. So I think people sometimes equate that with, hey, use Bootstrap or use this or that. I don't use any of those things, but I will pick and choose from different websites or different generators or things like that to build out my type system. I'm not going to rely on all of Bootstrap, but that doesn't mean that I don't want to take at least some CSS from another tool to help me build out that stuff better.
All right, now we're going to move on to talking about color, picking colors, what colors go together, which ones don't go together. And you have a note here, color theory. I actually don't know all that much about color theory, but I've certainly in the past I've used like a generator that will go off and give you a sort of a set of colors to work with. But for most of my designs, I generally start off with three or four different colors and I sort of tweak them and work with those colors and start to build the website. And then I'll go back and tweak those colors. And then I'll sort of settle on just a couple colors to actually use with the website. But is there anything you use to figure out like how, like if you know nothing about color and you wouldn't know what to pick, like how do you know if colors go well together?
There's just about like 1,000 palette generators out there. I would just Google for one of those, like a color palette generator. Typically what I'm going to do is I'm going to have some base idea of the colors that I want to be implementing, or maybe there's like a brand color. And then I'm going to look for accents or things that go along with that. And the state thing about color theory here is really, you don't have to be a master at any of this stuff, but you do know the basics of color theory. You know, hey, what is blue's complementary color? Shout it out.
I don't know.
You don't know the complementary color for blue?
No. What? I don't actually.
It's orange.
It's orange.
Yeah. Blue, that doesn't mean orange. You got to use blue with orange, but that means that those are the complementary colors. And so there's also the tertiary colors where it's like a triangle of complementary color-ish things. And not to say that you have to know that stuff, but any of these color palette generators are going to create those things for you. And a lot of that stuff you probably learned in elementary school, unless you're Wes. And so...
called grade school here in Canada. And grade we don't school. Learn. We learn yeah. about beavers and things like that in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not
marmots.
Colors.
Marmols. Marma.
Marmol.
Marmol.
Marmol. One website I did use for the longest time, I just remembered it. It was colorlovers.com. And it's like a social network for colors and patterns. And you can go on there and just grab like popular palettes or palettes people have used. And that's really cool because you can like first like see what are the popular ones and then you can kind of scroll through them and pick one that sort of jives with you.
Yeah. And there's like ones that'll help you find colors from photos and all sorts of interesting things too. Largely these palette generators and finders, what they're going to help you do is maybe pick out exact hex values that you might not have thought about before. And that's really just a huge thing is because, you know, you don't want to use the default CSS blue unless you're like going for a brutalist design or something.
Unless you're like Bloomberg. Are they still doing that?
I don't know. I kind of liked it because it was brutalist and that's like my style. But at the same time, yeah.
It looks like they've backed off from it.
Yeah, maybe people were.
I remember Bloomberg released like a new design and it was just totally blue. Yeah, it looks like they've really backed off from going all that blue. Then another one is Dropbox as well. They have like really went for it on like the brutal colors together. And I don't know, it's sort of a trend now, I think.
Yeah, it was for a little bit, certainly. So that's really it for colors is, you know, you could rely on your own intuition, your own eye. But at the end of the day, I don't think I've ever gone to the color picker in Figma and just selected, you know, a couple of colors at random based on my own eye. I've always used something to help me pick that stuff up. Now, Wes, you probably maybe have a better eye for that than I do, because it seems like that's how you approach it, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's really just often I'll just take inspiration from something else as well. Whether it's like I've talked many times about how I like have old CD art that I've loved. And I have a specific yellow and I try to work that into absolutely everything. And yeah, that's kind of just how I've gone about it. And it's probably not the proper way, but I tend to think my stuff looks pretty good.
Your stuff does look good. And at the end of the day, there isn't like a proper way. I mean, we're all design is one of these things that there are objective elements to it, but there at the end of the day, it can be totally subjective. And just like music, you know, if you know the rules or you have good intuition with the rules, you can break them and you can break them well.
That's something I've always wondered, like, can you programmatically create beautiful design? You know, like, could you just pop in one color and out the other, like using math? And like we used to have this album when I was a kid called The Relationship Between Music and Numbers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wonder what that is. And I looked into it and I was like, oh, like, good music is very mathematical, right?
Sure.
And yeah. Good design can be that way as well. I'm always curious, like, give me a sass mix in that will kick out the most beautiful design ever.
Yeah. One of my very first projects in music school for my music programming class was to write an application that generated regular Nintendo style chirp tunes randomly. So every time you'd push the button, it would use some Markov chains to essentially create an original composition. And since the types of things you could do in that sort of environment were a little bit easier, it was really sort of simple and everything sort of sounded good. But you could create little chirp tunies, whatever, just based on simple rules. All right, you do a fourth interval yeah. of a fourth. And then from there, well, what typically can sound good? Okay. Well, this can typically be a common out from that fourth. So what are you going to do? Well, maybe even there's a 1% chance that it's going to go to some wacky note, and that wacky note is going to influence the rest of it. So there's like a whole lot there. And I really think there is such a huge connection between design and music and any of this stuff that you could probably create something. There was that whole service. It was like Grid.io or something. I forget what it was. The golden.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember what that is, but I don't think it's still around unless people were talking about that going to kill design. That was going to kill every web design job ever.
Not resolving it anymore.
Not resolving. See, there you go.
I just put a card in our thing. I was like, I want to talk about that. Like GUI editors, like where are they in relation to what we do?
Yeah.
And like, are they going to take our jobs? Are they going to fail? Is it a joke? Is it just something we live with? So I think that would be kind of a cool episode as well.
So let's get into talking about one of our sponsors today, which is Sanity at sanity.io. And let me tell you, they got some good design over there at Sanity. That was one of the first things that I noticed when I went to their website. So we want to talk a little bit about Sanity as a service, Wes?
All right. So sanity.io, who just did a design refresh. They didn't do like a redesign, but they just refreshed a bunch of their design, a bunch of the layout. So check that out at sanity.io. It just feels really good. If you want to see an example of good design and colors and things being slightly different from each other, I really like the design of this. But what is Sanity? It's a structured content CMS. What does that mean? We refer to them as a headless CMS, meaning it's the back end to the front end that you're going to build, whether you're using Next or Nuxt or Gatsby or pretty much anything, custom React application, you can use their API to fetch and grab your data. They just released it a new workflow, which is initial values. And what this is going to do is allows you to pre-fill your fields with minimum configuration. They can be dynamically pre-filled. You can fetch data from basically you have like a resolver function for the default value. So if you wanted to go and go off and fetch some data for your pre-built stuff, you could. It's not just like a standard like John Smith filled in default text, right? The initial value templates for a quick selection of different values. So if you want to start up something, you can take like a template that you already has maybe 80% of your data filled in, and then you can just change it off from there. And I know for a lot of people in WordPress land, that's something they would just clone an existing post that was close enough and then change it. I think this is a pretty cool API, and it shows that they're thinking about the like really fussy stuff. Like they obviously have all of the base of the entire CMS, and now it looks like they're getting into some pretty neat not edge case stuff, but like making your experience as a developer even nicer. So totally. Check it out at sanity.io. And if you go to sanity.io/syntax, you're going to get double the free usage tier. Thanks so much to Sanity for sponsoring.
Cool. So let's get into the next part here, which is spacing. And we talked a little bit about spacing and the foundational aspect of things. But I think one thing that the one big mistake that developers make when they're trying to design things is they don't give things enough space, right? Mm-hmm. They don't give things enough room to breathe. And especially with paragraphs or headings, these things maybe just don't get the full on space that they need. And some of that can be resolved by even picking a proper system, right? If you have a system of margins and spacings and paddings, you're going to be much less likely to say, okay, let me eyeball this. And then your eyeball might not be totally correct. Whereas if you have, all right, this is always going to be the margin at the bottom of an H3, then things are going to get to breathe a little bit more. Another part of that spacing is even like line spacing, line height.
Mm-hmm.
I notice that's like a big thing is people don't often get the line height aspect of it correct. And I always personally, I use something called vertical rhythm. I don't know if you use vertical rhythm.
No, I've never used it.
It's sort of a difficult concept to explain without some visuals, but vertical rhythm is essentially the idea is that you have like, you have a vertical rhythm, to use the word in the definition, for the vertical spacing of your document. We're typically used to grid systems going like left and right, but this is almost like here is each line of the site takes up this amount of space and a heading should fit in between these lines. And then the paragraph text should fit in between each of these lines as well. And if you follow all of those systems that are developed for that, it ends up looking really nice. And it just puts it all on one vertical system, right? So really, vertical rhythm is just a fancy way of talking about the consistent spacing amongst headings, line heights, and all that stuff. And I do use largely vertical rhythm systems. So check like Google around for vertical rhythms and you'll find a tutorial. It takes a little bit more of a, here's some math to make it happen, but you shouldn't have to do the math yourself. Somebody's already done it. So yeah, definitely something to look into.
So that's just like let's say you set a 20px vertical rhythm. That means that you have like a vertical grid, and anytime you end off a paragraph, have some padding, have a horizontal rule, does that mean that it always just snaps to the like closest, I don't know, 5, 10, 20 pixel horizontal line if you were to overlay something?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's really what you have to think about it is like a line every 20 pixels, right? There's a line every 20 pixels. And you would want everything to always fall between two lines. So that dictates the line height of your paragraphs. It dictates the distance between your headings. It dictates the margins beneath and above your paragraphs and things like that. It's really just making that spacing consistent. And you don't have to follow these vertical rhythm rules, but what it does is it gives you a system to work off of.
Yeah, I would imagine like that's a great system to have for your line height, your padding, your margins. But I would imagine that like an image or a 1px border,
right,
that would throw it off. But like, you probably don't care about that, do you? As long as you're sort of following the base rules, it's going to look okay.
Yeah. And I used to care about that. I used to like be okay, these images can only be, you know, it would have to snap to whatever, but that mm-hmm. is a giant pain in the ass. And I'm not, I don't adhere to that really yet, at least anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's largely changed into here's a consistent margin beneath and above things and consistent line height that fits within that vertical system in a perfect world.
One other tip I have is on your headings, I will, for a lot of fonts, and Helvetica included, you set the letter spacing to -1 pixels. And that, I don't know what it is about doing that, but it just makes it look a lot better. And if you would go to any website that you enjoy the look of, you'll almost always find that they have set the letter spacing of that either to be 1 pixel less, or sometimes they even stretch it out a little bit more, depending on what the font is.
Yeah, I don't do that, but I used to with the other font that I used when I changed my heading font. It has changed for me, but I used to definitely do that a lot because I think I used Open Sans before. It just didn't look good without it. And again, the last one is really just consistency within your margins and paddings. One thing that I really have done consistently in my site is to have these, you know, sort of default margins and padding set up is essentially, you know, 1 rem, 2 rem sort of deal. And I know that if I want a consistent spacing in my site, it needs to be something reasonably divisible. As in, if I'm going to have a margin bottom here, I'm never going to use margin bottom 10 pixels. I'm going to use margin bottom, you know, 0.5 rems or margin bottom 1 rem or something. So that way at least falls within some divisible system of this thing that exists rather than just some arbitrary value that I've determined at that particular point. I think arbitrary values that you just determine are a great way to throw your system off and just have things look out of place, you know?
I just did a quick lookup of Sanity's letter spacing because I was like, theirs looks good. And they're using 0.5 pixel. Mm. And I didn't even know. I was like, can you use 0.5 pixel? And I looked it up and I turned it on and off. And at least on my monitor, 4K monitor, there is a difference. So A half pixel letter spacing might be the ticket if the negative one is not what you're looking for. So try that out next time.
Ooh.
Hot tip, sanity.
Hot tip. All right, let's get into the typography elements. And this is the stuff that largely can throw people for a loop because I think it's the easiest to really goof up. And since type is such a huge component on the web, I mean, you could remove a background image from most major websites and our background images, colors, all that stuff. You could remove that from most major websites and you'd still be able to tell what they were just based on the type system that remained. So the type is such a huge component of a visual aesthetic for a website. And in the past, there used to be some really hard and fast rules like, oh, you use sans serifs for headlines and use serifs for body text. That's what you just did, right? And since we only had like five fonts to choose for, you did like Georgia or something for your paragraph text and Arial for your header because we couldn't even use Helvetica at that point. But largely, the world has changed. New fonts have existed now that are better for displaying at small font sizes like body text, right? So there's really not that hard and fast rules about when to use sans serifs versus when to use serifs, and it can largely be totally up to your own personal aesthetic at this point. Now for me, typography in terms of picking which fonts and picking a system is both a hard and an easy problem to solve because for picking fonts, I am not talented at picking fonts, but for developing a type scale, I can use something like type-scale.com and it's going to just give me the CSS that I need for my type scale. So yeah, I use things like type scale and I just don't even think about it. You know, because your paragraph types, your heading types, all the sizes, it even spits out the CSS for you and you don't have to bring in a giant framework or something like that. So I have a much easier time with developing the system just simply because I can use somebody else's system. But in the same regard, picking fonts is a really tough one and something that I've noticed that you were really super good at. So I'm interested to get some of your hot tips on how you pick your fonts.
Yeah, I used to do the whole like go to Google Fonts and then just sit there and scroll forever. Oh, yeah. And what I realized is like, I'm not good at picking out these or if they're all like a quick angry fox or whatever the thing is, like I can't spot them like that. So what I started doing is I went to these websites like Creative Market and, I forget what the other ones are. Creative Market is probably the biggest one. And I look through the fonts that people sell there. And usually for $20-$30, sometimes even less, you can go and buy a really nice font. And what gets me there is that when they sell it, you see them using the font both with other fonts, as well as you see them like stylizing it and colors and things like that. And then I just sort of like look at that because I have my sketch on the right and I'm like, that doesn't look as good as it did when I bought it. And then I look at what they did and I was like, oh, you know why it's better? It's because they've put some texture on it. They've done some spacing. They've used like a really big B and then the rest of the letters are much smaller. So the like little things like that. And you can pick up all kinds of tips from the person who made the font who knows how to make that font look its best. And also you just get these like fonts that nobody has necessarily seen before because they're not on Google Fonts. You have to go ahead and buy them. There's a little bit more overhead because you have to make sure that you have a license to use it on a website, but that almost is never a problem because they just give you the font and they give you a license to use it. They often will give you the WAF, the HOF, all of those different files that are used. WAF, HOF, MOF, whatever is needed. So that's my like little trick. I've been really into this font called Rudnica Next. I use it on a lot of my websites. It's the syntax logo is built in that as well. Actually, I think the syntax is Rudnica. And they just released another one, which is a little bit updated. And a lot of thought went into it. My only other tip that I would say is that if you're going to buy a font from somebody, first check if they're selling it on their independently on their own website. Yeah. Because then all the money goes to them. Because like honestly, these $20 for a font, I can't imagine how long that takes to build.
Yeah, and I've bought fonts before, and it's one of those things that if you're buying from an individual, it's such a good thing rather than buying from one of these giant stores that have just bought up licenses to a bunch of old fonts and whatever. They're just like hoarding onto old fonts and jacking up the rates. But again, it does take a lot of work. And if somebody is an independent font creator, one of my favorite, what was this site? There was like a site of this person who had taken a couple of fonts from like things in the 1970s, like one like gang biker jackets from New York. And another one was like a B-boy Grandmaster Flash style stuff. And I used that in all of my talks. And I bought that font because it was like the coolest darn thing ever. And it was like all one off. And, you know, so I'm absolutely a huge fan of buying fonts whenever you can. And it, even if you want to check out some cool fonts, you can check out the Level Up Tutorials library fresh. But if you want to look at some maybe less exciting fonts than that, you want to check out another Fresh sponsor of ours, which is FreshBooks.
Yes, FreshBooks is cloud accounting for a small business, whether you need to track your time, you need to keep track of your invoices, send people invoices, accept payments online. That's a big one that I like, because I often get people wanting to buy a course from me and they'll email me like, hey, like we would like to buy the course. Please let us know how. And usually I have to like email back. I'm like, push the buy button and type in your credit card details and click buy. And almost always, like obviously I don't say that because that would be rude, but almost always they have a process where they need to get an invoice. They need to send it off. They need, someone needs to approve it. Then the invoice gets turned into a purchase order. And then I have to approve that. And then finally I get paid and something like that. And almost always what happens is I do that all through FreshBooks where I'll give them a quote. The quote will get approved. I'll turn that quote into an invoice via FreshBooks, and then they can pay it directly online right through it. It goes into Stripe, same place that all of my other is. And the only thing I have to do is I have to manually set up that license, which takes me 10 seconds to do.
Yeah.
So even if you have your own, like obviously I don't just sell all of my courses through it, but anytime I need to send off an invoice or have something that's a little bit more official, that has a little bit more overhead, larger companies do this all the time. The FreshBooks is my go-to. Go to freshbooks.com/syntax. Use syntax in the how did you hear about us? And you're going to get a 30-day unrestricted free trial. Thanks so much to FreshBooks for sponsoring.
Cool. So let's keep this moving. This episode's running long. We have next one is going to be interaction. Now, interaction design is such a huge component of the web that you don't even think about being a design component. But we are all interaction designers, especially if you are used to using things and building things that people interact with. So one thing that I think people oftentimes neglect is to have their interactions makes sense, right? When you click the right arrow, it should do the thing on the right direction. When you hover over something, maybe it should interact and move in a certain way that you'd expect it to. Like you don't want to hover over something and have it jump over to the side of the screen just because you think it looks cool. Again, you can do these things, but you have to do them well to have them work out well.
Yeah. My other tip here is that design for all states. So think about your standard state. What's like the regular state called? Normal? Vanilla? It's designed for just your regular state, which everybody thinks
resting,
of.
But then resting.
Resting state. Then you also have visited, active, and hover. So think about when somebody is hovering over it with their mouse. Think about when somebody is currently clicking on it. Like even just like a little, I don't know, some people hate this, but the one pixel down on a button, when you click it, the button goes down, it presses, depresses. Think about visited states for links. When somebody's actually visited that URL, how can you change that a little bit differently? And also when somebody's tabbing through your application, that's sort of the one that everyone forgets about. And you can leave it on like the default blue at the very least, leave that on. Don't take it off. If you mm-hmm. do take it off, then you have to think about, okay, what do my links? What do my buttons? What do these cards? Whenever somebody's tabbing through them, what does that look like when they are in their active state?
Sure. Another one we have here is about animations, and you want your animations to be fairly quick. I have most of mine over in like 0.3 seconds, sort of around then. All of my stuff on Level Up right now is actually physics-based with React Spring. But for the most part, you want your animations to be quick, because even if it feels longish to you, it probably feels very long to your users who are waiting to use your thing. You have a lot of patience for whatever app you're using at any given point. But a lot of the times, the people who are using your stuff just want it to load and just want it to do its thing and let you to add. They don't care about the fancy animation. Now, while I do use fancy animations in Level Up Tutorials, I'd like to think that I don't let them linger too long.
Yeah, I love that. Like if you want a rule, and I don't know what rules are not necessarily the best thing, but if you want like a base to start, put all of your animations at 0.3 seconds. That's like a really good spot to start and then tweak them from here there. Anything over probably half a second is probably too long because it's going to make your website feel sluggish and things like that. And that's one of those things where someone uses their website and just gets irritated and they don't necessarily know why. But if you were to dig into it, I guarantee that would be one reason.
Yeah, totally. So one last thing is we want to say there are concerns beyond like the way that it just looks for you, right? Because there's all these larger concerns about accessibility, right? Because you are just a person using this thing, but everybody has different concerns about how they use things, whether or not, there's a lot of different things that could be considered a disability when you're using an application. So go back and listen to our accessibility episode if you want to learn more about this. But accessibility is a major thing, and color contrast is one of those things that really just got totally neglected, especially when there was a trend of using super light grays for text for everything. Accessibility, that was like a big trend. And it was like basically like an anti-accessibility trend, if you think about it, because they did not pass the color contrast checker rules, which you should obviously be checking out at all times because not everybody has good vision. Not everybody can read those things. And the last thing you want to do is limit the ability for somebody to read your application.
Yeah. So always assess your accessibility.
Yes.
What else we have here is check your fonts on Windows. Like that's such a simple thing, but almost always I'm guilty of doing this myself. You pick this beautiful font that has 800 weights and you have these amazing thin fonts and it looks amazing on your 4K super expensive display. And then you bring that up on a older Android or like a Windows and the font rendering is not the same from device to device. And that's just a huge miss, I think, on a lot of websites. I see it all the time. I often see people complain about it. And I know exactly what happened there is somebody on a 30-inch iMac designed that thing and never thought to try it on on like a Windows computer because the font rendering is different.
In that same regard, make sure you load up your design on another computer anyways. Yeah, have you ever had that thing where the font is installed locally and you're like, oh yeah, the font face declaration is working, but it was actually not working. But because you had the font installed locally, this happened to me before where the font was installed locally. So then I pulled it up on another computer and I was like, oh wait, the font face isn't working. Crap. Everybody's been saying not the right font.
Check out Firefox. They've got a fonts tab and it will tell you if the font is local or loaded over a font face. And that's because I used to be like, look, I don't know if it's working or not because I have it installed on my computer. So like, how would I know if it's not? Like you can't necessarily turn them off. And then when Firefox rolled out their fonts tab, I was like, oh, this is so much better. It tells you all of the fonts that are loaded on the page and whether they're system fonts or not.
By the way, I think you can turn fonts off, just FYI.
Really?
How? In Fontbook, I think you can disable them.
Oh my gosh, how have I been living my life for this long? This is why I tweet things, because almost always when I have a problem with something.
Yeah, someone's got an answer.
Someone's got an answer. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you just right click it and disable it.
12 years of my life. Oh my gosh. Wow, now I know that.
And now you know. Cool. So there's a lot of other, concerns here. Again, there's a lot of accessibility stuff. Some people had messaged us saying, like, make sure you keyboard navigation. But to me, that's more of not a design thing. I don't know. Either way, you want to make sure that your application is passing all sort of accessibility, making sure that your application is easy to use for everybody in addition to all types of browsers and users.
Yeah.
And there are some things you probably don't need to support, like a tiny little watch that somebody just made for 1 year or something. But for the most part, try to get things working on as many things as you can. Okay, the last thing we want to talk about here is inspiration and resources. And this is such a huge component of design, especially for people who may not have the inherent design eye out of the box like myself. I take a lot of inspiration from different things. And we joke that you don't want to go ham on some of these design trends, but some of the design trends and some of the really excellent design resources, like looking at Stripe's website, can be a really illuminating thing for figuring out really good practices. Now, I don't mean to say you should do the exact same thing Stripe is doing, because that's a joke that we made at the beginning of the show, but I do think that you can learn a ton about design in general from Stripe's website. In fact, one of the things that I learned about design from Stripe's website was table design.
Yeah.
My tables were looking just god awful, and I couldn't figure it out. Like, why were my tables looking so poorly spaced and just tight and whatever? So then I went to Stripe's dashboard because I like their tables. I examined them. I figured out what they were doing differently than I was, and I adjusted my tables accordingly. I didn't just straight up jack their CSS, but I understood exactly what was making theirs look good and what was making mine look bad.
I love using Dribbble. It's Dribbble.com. It's where designers will post screenshots of whatever it is they're working on. And I find that to be the best spot to, when I'm having trouble designing a card or a table or a nav or something like that, I will often go to Dribbble and look at other ways people have done things. There's lots of great ideas. And if you want to get better at design, just take like six of the things on the homepage and just build them pixel for pixel as they're showing up on there. I did that quite a bit. I remember people would always post these like navs that like folded down like an accordion, and all the comments were like, oh, nice, but you can't actually do that. And yeah. I would just try to build them myself in little code pens or things like that. And that really leveled up my skills. So
for the most part, the things that people think you can't do, you can. They just don't have the imagination to pull it off. So
totally. So go ham on Dribbble.
Site Inspire.
Obviously, we joke a lot about Site Inspire. My problem with, I used to go to all these websites like CSS Remix. And
yeah, there's a whole bunch.
All these like best web design. And they've all turned into, here's a huge photo with the name of the website overlaid. And like, I'm like, this is not helping me. Like, yeah, there's like a beautiful designer's homepage, but like, I'm designing a real app here and I need to be able to fit dense content in there. I need to be able to convey value, and having a beautiful photo with some Helvetica in white overlaid didn't help me. So I stopped going to those websites and just went on Dribbble.
You know what? I look at that stuff as less of a guideline for how to do things and more of a place to jog my creativity in a way and just say like,
yeah,
what are things that are interesting or different about this that I can think about or utilize myself, rather than like, is this practical? Because chances are almost everything on Site Inspire is not practical. I also really like Code Drops from Timpanis. I never know how to say that word myself, but Code Drops, they have these great code demos about different things. And even just like button inspiration, they'll be like, here's a page with 30 different button interaction designs. And like, when I'm looking for something to do or looking for something to figure out in that regard, I'll go to Code Drops and just mess around with some of them and try it out, because they're designed really well and they have the interaction things in here. And not only that, but it's all, you know, open source to be able to just borrow the CSS in ways that you would want to use them. Another thing I have here is take a nice little trip around the World Wide Web and really just check out websites, check out things that look good. If you're on something that looks good and you don't know why it looks good, inspect it, check out their fonts, check out their spacing, check out their margins. I mean, even just like on Code Drops right now, here I am, I'm noticing that there are little articles where they have a heading, a date, a paragraph, and a read more button. It looks nice. So you could come in here directly and see, okay, what do they got going on? They have an H2 with a font size of whatever, and then they have a paragraph that has one M of padding on the top and bottom, and then they have a paragraph with no margin on it. And like, what are the things that make this look good? I mean, there's a max width on the paragraph. I don't do that personally, but that's something I probably should do, right? Because some paragraph texts just look better when they're a little bit more narrow. And so there's these nice little things that you can pick up just from browsing the web. And I remember there was the first time I discovered, do you remember when this was super trendy in the web 2.0 era, where there was like, you do a very light color, one pixel hairline, and then a very dark one, and it would give this like emboss effect on anything.
I still have that on westboss.com. And do I was you? Looking at it the other day, and I was like, man, hilarious. That dates my website so much now.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it does for sure.
Yeah. But when I saw that technique for the first time, it was on some like video game website, and I was like, ooh, that looks really nice. I really want to figure out how to do that. And then I saw that, okay, that's how they were doing it. And then I just started implementing it and everything, because that's, you know, the era.
Yeah. Another resource is Adam Wathen and Steve Schoger. I remember the first time we talked about him on the podcast, I called him Schoger. He has refactoringui.com. It's a book just about design. And he also has these amazing Twitter tips where, similar to how I do the coding ones, he just goes into design things and creates these amazing, like, they probably take him hours to build.
They're awesome.
It shows, because like he's gained like 60,000 followers in like a year's time, just because he's really broken down it and just provided real content. So check him out. He's Steve Schoger, S-C-H-O-G-E-R on Twitter. He posts some good stuff. And he also has a list of all of his tips, which I need to do because once I tweet them, they're gone, right? But so he has this like list, and I see people refer to the list of tweets quite a bit because a lot of them are pretty timeless.
Yeah, totally. I learned so much from refactoring UI, but also just from, I think that the things that are the most helpful are like the do's and don'ts things. And I just love that style of learning things in general. Cool. So that is it for our design foundational tips. If you have design foundational tips, let us know. We are both developers, and we are always looking to learn more about design in general. So let us know what your sick design tips are. We'll give you a retweet. We'll share you out here, and hopefully everybody can learn a little bit more about making their stuff look better, because that's what it's all about, helping each other. So let's get into sick picks. Do you have a sick pick?
I do. And this is a vitamin, a mineral, magnesium. I've been on this.
It's a mineral. Wow.
Yeah, it's a mineral. It's a sick mineral. I've been on this like quest of trying to figure out how to like have more energy. And we've talked about this a lot. Like, obviously the gym is one and whatnot, but I'm also thinking like maybe I'm not getting enough vitamins and things like that. So I've been trying all kinds of different stuff. And I think the one that is really helping me, because I can tell when I don't take it, is just magnesium before bed. And it makes me feel a lot more, not like I'm still tired in the morning, but not like, I'm a zombie, yeah. Right? And that's big for me because...
That's a good zombie noise, by the way. You are believable.
Thank you. So check it out. Do some research into magnesium. Apparently it helps you get a better sleep and feel more well-rested. And I was talking to Scott, and you said that you take it as well, right?
Yeah, shout out to magnesium. I take something called, I'm actually in a break from it right now, just because I think you're supposed to, something called ZMA, which is like zinc, magnesium, and vitamin B. And man, if I take that before bed, I sleep like a darn rock. And it's like, unfortunately, I feel bad because sometimes, you know, like Brooklyn will wake up and I'll just be like out if I took the zinc. So I'd feel bad if I took that every night. But it helps a lot. The magnesium, it's got to be the magnesium in it, because I know that makes you a little sleepy. But I know it does interact with something. So check out your interactions, whatever medications you're taking.
Yeah, don't take it. I always thought I was getting it, and I thought it'd be in my multivitamin. And then I realized that you're not supposed to take it within a couple hours of any other vitamins because it harms the absorption, something like that.
Yeah, I couldn't take it with my nerve medication with my tailbone, or at least I had to wait 2 hours. So yeah, definitely one of those ones you want to check on here. I have a really interesting sick pick. It's this app. You know, I've been learning a lot about apps since I got this iPhone, because there's a lot of new apps for me to discover. Got the apps on the phone and the phone and the apps. So what have I discovered? Well, I found an app called Real Good, and I'm so sorry, Android people. I'm so sorry. This exists as a website, so you can use it as a web app. I'm turning into one of those people who's suggesting things that aren't cross-platform. But this is Real Good, REELGOOD.com. And this is the place to find what's streaming where. And the design, the interface, everything's good. If you want to talk about design and all that stuff, this is really good. It takes sort of the Netflix-style design and changes it a little bit. But what this service is it basically tells you where things are streaming. So, like, let's say there's a movie I wanted to watch the other night. It was called Night of the Comet. It's a movie from 1984. It was sort of a fun, lighthearted horror movie about zombies. And it was really funny. really good, super good movie, but we didn't know where to watch it because it was this older movie. It wasn't super popular. So I went to this real good app on my phone and I typed in, I added a comment and it told me, hey, you could stream it for free on Tubi TV, Vudu, or you could rent it or buy it from these following services. And I'd never heard of Tubi TV, so I installed it. And sure enough, it's like a Netflix competitor with a bunch of free movies. And it Chromecasted well to the TV and played this movie for me. I would never have ever heard about that if it wasn't for this service. And so this works with all that stuff, Netflix, Hulu, Prime, Showtime, HBO, anything. If you are looking to find where things are streaming, you just type it in and it tells you where, if anywhere, things are streaming, or otherwise you may have to buy it or whatever. I've already used this like 8 times since then. So I've been a big fan of this site, this app in general, and Real Good, reelgood.com.
I thought it was going to be a fishing app. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, real good bass.
Awesome. What are we doing now?
Shameless plugs.
I'll plug my upcoming beginner JavaScript course. It is almost done. I'm recording like bananas right now, and I can't wait to get it out. BeginnerJavaScript.com. What about you?
I have a series out on Next.js 9 with server-side rendering and server-side routes using the fancy new API routes within Next 9. We built a GraphQL API with MongoDB. It's a full-stack application, and we built a little habit tracking app. It's not a perfect app because we only have 24 videos to get it done in. But by the end of it, you should have the confidence to, one, connect to a MongoDB, set up a Apollo API via a serverless route within Next.js 9 without anything else. It's fancy. It's super cool. So check it out. leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and save 25%.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you on Monday. Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.